So this morning's guest is Glenn. Glenn's a chartered practicing accountant. He's also the CEO of Lifeful, who are a financial intermediary for NDIS plan management. They also provide support coordination. So he has a good understanding of the world of NDIS. He's also formerly a senior executive of a number of high-profile not-for-profits. And this morning he's going to share his thoughts on the importance of maintaining control of your finances and remaining resilient for financial in the financial world, which is often designed for people who are fully sighted. So a big welcome to Glenn. I think you've frozen, Glenn, have you?
No, I haven't frozen. Good morning, all. How are you? I wasn't sure whether you were doing a mute off big welcome to Glenn or just passing over. So I thought I'd pause for a moment just in case, otherwise we'd be all over the top of each other. Good morning, all, and good morning, Faye. Thank you for the opportunity of talking to you today. Faye, by the way, was my second ever client, so she's particularly special to us, and she's been an inspiration to myself for quite a while. So it's lovely to have an opportunity to meet with you all. So talking through financial resilience, and I thought probably a decent starting point would be to put a definition around financial resilience. So what I'm going to talk through today is a definition for what I mean by financial resilience, talk through why I think it's really crucially important, particularly for sight impaired people, but for people in general. Touch on the NDIS. Obviously that's a fairly topical issue for a lot of people, and just kind of think through whether it's possible that the NDIS is able to help in this area. And then talk about some pathways through to that kind of financial resilience, and finish up with some hopefully helpful tips. I'm sure between the group of people that are here, almost everything I talk about will be known to some people, but hopefully there are a couple of other things that that aren't as particularly well known. So I just wanted to start off with a quote. I'm reading a book at the moment, and when I say reading a book, all of my reading these days is via e-books. I spend a fair bit of time in the car, so it's just a great opportunity to do a lot of reading. And I'm reading one by Hugh Mackay at the moment. It's called The Good Life, and it really is almost an antidote to all of the positivity and, you know, everybody expecting happiness every day and all of our jobs to be fulfilling and all of that kind of thing. And he talks about the fact that, you know, happiness is a nice thing. And the quote that I've pulled out of his book is that happiness, victory, and fulfillment are nice. They're nice little things, but they don't teach us much. And I think, you know, Martin was talking yesterday about the fact that resilience really comes through adversity, and you don't really learn from the normal things in life that are just pleasant, you know, until you've experienced adversity, until you've experienced challenges and things that haven't gone right, you're really not getting your resilience. And I've resonated with that on a personal level as well. So I just want to kind of start with, you know, trying to say what it is that we mean by financial resilience. And to me, it's about having confidence in your own financial situation. Not worrying, you know, having sufficient to be able to not worry about paying the bills, and having a bit put aside for future goals and enough to cover emergencies. So it's really not about, you know, being rich. It's a mindset that you don't have to stress about money, and you can focus your energy on the other parts of your life and your future and the things that really are important. So, you know, as I was kind of putting that definition together, my wife said to me, yeah, that's just a dream. And I think, you know, to an extent that's a fair comment as well. But it really is about, you know, understanding when you have enough and making sure that you have enough. So why is it important? If you kind of, you know, work through the numbers and you think about, you know, how do we end up in terms of retirement? There was a study done by, it was only last year, by Mortgage Choice, and it was a about 4,000 people. So it was a decent statistical survey. And what they found is that 54% of people, so half of the population, don't think about their retirement savings before they're 50. And that to have, you know, what they've referred to as a comfortable retirement, you need savings of around $340,000. Now, that's a decent amount for a comfortable retirement. And with all of us living longer these days, you know, that number probably goes up because you've got longer periods of time and different options around aged care and all of those sorts of things. They also found that less than a third, so less than 27%, ever achieved their retirement goals. So whatever goals they'd set, only a, you know, less than a third, almost ever achieved them. And that the average super balance, so this is now Australian Bureau of Statistics number, the average super balance for people 65 to 74 is just $243,900. So it's already less than half of what's seen as necessary for a comfortable retirement. And if you take a median, because that number is also inflated by people at the top end. So if you take a median superannuation amount, it's around $95,000. So people at 65 through 74 retiring on $95,000. Now, if you then put that in the context of what that means for people who are sight impaired, then, you know, 84% of Australian adults are in the labour force. When you bring that down to people broadly with disability, the participation rate comes down to half. So it's 53% of people in the workforce. Then when you bring it to people who are blind or partially sighted, it comes down to 24%. So only 24% of the blind, partially sighted, vision impaired population are involved in the workforce. And the median gross income of people with disability is half of what it is for people without. So that median wage for people without disability is $1,016 a week, and for people with disabilities, it's $505. So, you know, there are a lot of imperatives that say that people who are sight impaired and people with other disabilities are really going to struggle to have decent retirement savings. So, you know, I pose the question, is it important to stay in control of your finances? And I think it's really a question that answers itself. So I then kind of think about, you know, where can the NDIS help? And there are some areas. So firstly, they have a funding line called capacity building and training in plan and financial management. And it's about building financial skills and people developing their own self-management capabilities and ability to engage with providers and develop service agreements, claiming and improving their organisational skills. So that's a reasonable support that can be put in people's plans to develop these skills. There is also capacity building around finding and keeping a job. And it's about providing workplace assessments and helping people to successfully engage in employment. And it's got a focus around providing support to employers to be able to make workplaces more accommodating and more accessible, and also just in terms of their understanding of the value that people who may be, you know, vision impaired can bring to a workforce and what they can do as opposed to what employers may think they can't do. There's also workplace assistance. So that's around supporting to obtain and gaining employment. And that can be built into a plan for any person, any participant of the scheme who is of working age and has an employment goal. And it's really about navigating those complex barriers to employment and developing career plans and as necessary, customising a job to be able to accommodate people and get more people transitioning, you know, whether it be from supported employment or from unemployment into open employment roles. There is also available to people plan management and financial administration, where you can have a plan manager to undertake the, you know, if you like, the financial administration of your NDIS plan, put in place all of the payment arrangements with providers, provide financial assistance, and increased control over how the plan's utilised, and then managing and monitoring budgets to make sure that people are staying on track and, you know, not going to run out of funds in their plan, and equally not going to end up with unspent funds, and then managing claims and paying providers, maintaining records and producing monthly statements, and maintaining documentation in the event of NDIS or, you know, fraud audits and those sorts of things. So I've just kind of put together some thinking around what I see as sort of pathways to resilience. Now, obviously, I'm not providing financial advice, because that needs to really be around people's individual circumstances, you know, depending on where they are and what their goals are and what they have available to them. So I've tried to put together a set of learnings, I guess, around the pathways to resilience that really apply to everybody, and hopefully they're things that people can bring into their life and kind of have a bit more focus around, you know, saving for the future and making sure that we maximise our retirement potential. So my first one is around making it personal, which is not, you know, keep it a secret. It's about focusing on your own personal situation and not anyone else's. You know, the only thing that matters in terms of financial resilience is around the extent to which you're able to use what you have to be able to reach your goals. So it's a very personal thing. And when you start kind of comparing to what others have, or, you know, what you'd really love to have and those sorts of things, it can become quite, you know, you can become a little disgruntled around that and a little dissatisfied with things. The second one is about, you know, the number one investment is in yourself. So it's really about investing energy and money in learning the skills that you're going to need. Now, whether that's money management skills, whether that is learning the technology, whether it's understanding the banking system, all of those sorts of things to make sure that your resilience is strong. And really importantly, focusing on your own health, because whatever it is that people do, if you don't have your health and energy levels and, you know, plenty of sleep and all of those sorts of things, then you're going to struggle to succeed in whatever it is that you're trying to do. I think the next one was really thinking broadly around income streams and those sorts of things. You know, I think if you can have a job that you enjoy, that's the ultimate, you know, an income plus something that you're thoroughly enjoying. We've almost got to an expectation where we expect our work to be satisfying and fulfilling and enjoyable. And I think, you know, it's a bit of a myth, really. It's there to, you know, there for us to make a living, and we need to have our enjoyment and fulfillment outside of work. So if we can get something in work, then I think that's a bonus, not an expectation. And there are now lots and lots of different opportunities. You know, you think about that gig economy, you know, the opportunities for freelancing and doing writing and a whole range of things where people can offer their freelancing services without ever having to venture into a workplace. I think there are a whole bunch of businesses now, you know, around online businesses and things that can easily be operated from home. So that there's a much broader view of ways that you can make a living. And quite a number of my clients now are kind of coming into the disability sector doing various roles because, you know, they've lived in that sector in a lot of cases and they know it well, they understand, they can help other people navigate. There are, you know, funded roles of kind of peer support and, you know, some of those sort of things. So there's some really interesting new roles that are coming out that I think open up to people. Particularly people that might be vision impaired or are partly sighted that may not have existed 10 plus years ago. I think it's really important to get a sense of where your money is going. So, you know, everyone should have their own personal budget. in reality, I think we all kind of think that we should, and we know we should, and we talk about it, but rarely do we ever really do it. So that budget, understanding what your living expenses are likely to be, so you can keep track of where your money's actually going. Because, you know, this kind of financial ability to kind of continue is very much about living within your means, and then being able to put aside a bit towards emergencies and being able to put aside a bit towards the future. And that's really the key to it, no matter how much income. You know, if you're a high income earner, that's the key to it, is being able to put some aside. If you're a low income earner, the key is to live within your means and be able to put something aside, particularly for those emergencies, because, you know, there are things that can come up in people's lives that can just wipe us out. You know, we have high costs as a result of medical expenses, or, you know, we get locked up for 3 months because of a mystery virus. You know, all sorts of things can happen. The other thing that I think is really crucial is to start paying off debt as soon as you can. And I kind of quarantine the word debt in terms of credit cards are the killer. So any credit card debt, because we're running really high rates of interest on those, even in low interest times, the relative rate on credit cards is extortionate. And I set aside from that mortgages and investment loans. So, you know, investment loans, if you're building investments, if you're building future business, all sorts of things, well, investment loans are okay. And, you know, mortgage obviously is at a much lower rate, and it's key around building that key asset for people of their home. Then in terms of retirement planning, you just need to start as soon as possible in thinking about it. For those people that have the skills, then invest. You know, the stock market and property and all of those sorts of things are always fantastic. Wherever possible, you know, the best thing you can ever do is to build passive incomes. So building income streams that just don't rely on you being there all day, every day, that are running along, you know, whether it be in parallel with income streams or in parallel with welfare payments or in parallel with whatever's going on, but building those passive income. And as soon as possible, start to top up super funds so that we can start to build for the future and put as much aside as we possibly can. So, you know, the phase brief around staying safe in an electronic financial world, I've got some sort of what I've referred to as kind of tips and tech. And the first one I want to talk about is the assistive technology, because so much, you know, there is just so much new technology coming available all the time. And staying abreast of that, I think, is a really good opportunity for people to live richer lives. And, you know, I feel as though I'm preaching to the choir, because I suspect that everyone in this group, you know, continually kind of monitor and focus around those technologies, because they're great opportunities. So I just thought I'd spend a couple of moments on assistive technology as defined through the NDIS, just to make sure that people are aware of what's available to them in that space, and really, you know, just defining assistive tech. It's around equipment or systems for moving around, for communicating with other people, or for processing information. So a lot of the apps that we kind of talk about and think about fit nicely into that category. It's a reasonable and necessary support, and as long as you have a goal that funding can sit under, then you have the ability to use it. In some cases, it may require AT assessment, obviously, and whether that's an allied health person or, you know, rehab engineers or various others. And sometimes the process is a little cumbersome around needing reports from AT assessors and quotes. And Faye will be able to talk to you in spades about this kind of stuff, having working in that space. So then there is a relatively straightforward bit of funding, which is called Level 1 and Level 2, which goes into a lot of people's NDIS plans. It's about everyday use products, so things like replacement canes and cane tips and handheld magnifiers, talking kitchen scales, tactile dots. But the Level 1 is called basic tech, and it's low cost, low risk. You can generally buy it from retailers. It requires no assistance for setting up and using. So things like, you know, non-slip bath mats and large print labels and walking sticks and some of those sorts of things will fit into that sort of basic level one. Then there's standard standard tech, which is level two. So these are things that are off the shelf, easily accessed and tested and trialed. So things like shower chairs and handrails and portable ramps and some of those sorts of things fit into that category. Then there's assisted tech levels three and four. So the specialised, level three is called specialised, and those are things that need to be adjusted to individual support needs. So things like power assist chairs and bedstick poles and, you know, ceiling hoists and things like that that are bought from specialised assistive technology suppliers. Then there are complex level four. So these are things that are either custom made or off the shelf and adjusted to suit a person. So things like, you know, environmental control units and electronic mobile assistive technology for vision impaired people and complex communication devices. So those are the kind of just the levels of assistive tech that you need to be thinking about if people have NDIS plans to be able to get the support and the equipment that they need. So continuing with the theme of, you know, of staying safe in an environment, I suspect people are aware, but the Reserve Bank has done quite a bit of good work around our cash in trying to make sure that each of the notes are identifiable. So each note has a different series of raised bumps. So the $5 note has one, the 10, two, 23. And they put the bumps slightly left of centre on the top edge, and it's designed so that whichever way your money sits in purses and wallets and those sorts of things, they're able to tell which denomination of note is which by the number of bumps. Then with the notes, and I know cash is becoming far less prevalent these days, but it's the Reserve Bank is still, I think, making some good efforts to try to make sure that they are they're able to be determined. So each banknote is a different length, so that having them together, you can kind of identify them apart. They also provide a measuring device, which allows you to put a note in and determine, you know, which denomination is which. And they've got large, bold colour contrasts for those for people that are partly sighted that can, you know, can hopefully see the black against a good bright coloured background. So then thinking about staying safe in the banking system, there are quite a number of things available, and they're quite variable between banks as well. So most people with a concession card or that receive any form of, you know, care allowance or welfare payment or anything else are entitled to a fee-free account. People may know that most FBOS machines have got tactile features on them, so they've got a dot on the 5 key and then a circle on the OK button and a cross on the cancel button. So in terms of kind of finding a way around those. And then ANZ have been particularly focused, I think, on providing accessible equipment and things. So they've got audio-enabled ATMs, and they're increasing the number of those. And then obviously, you know, with ATMs, the number five on each pin pad has the raised dot to mark the centre. All of their smart ATMs, which are an increasing number of their ATMs as they replace, the cards have accessibility features. So they have tactile indicators to say, you know, which way up cards are. Generally, they have a larger font and higher visibility with, you know, with good edges so you can work out which way the card needs to go in. But of course, one of the better functions is phone banking, which is just a whole, you know, whole lot, avoids a whole lot of the problems all around, and it's available 24/7, and you can do it from the comfort of your home. Also, obviously, online banking, you know, for people who have, you know, large screens and are partly sighted, online banking is accessible. You know, we've got screen readers and magnifiers and things that can make that work particularly well. Westpac have also been quite active in the space, and they have a cardless cash feature in their mobile banking. So you have an app and you can stage, if you like, a withdrawal. And then when you go to the ATM to physically get the cash out, you get a code that you can then use it at an ATM. So it saves a lot of the hassle around using ATMs. They've also got quite a number of talking ATMs, and there's an ATM locator on their website that points you to where those automated teller machines are. And increasingly, banking with voice is taking hold, where you can access all of your banking through the Google Assistant and Alexa, which is Amazon's virtual assistant. The Commonwealth Bank sadly hasn't been quite as helpful. They put out a lot of stuff that was, and many of you will probably know, was fairly heavily criticised through consultations, and yet they just didn't take on any of the advice. So they've just settled a discrimination case that was brought to them by Graham Innes after he'd finished as discrimination commissioner, and also Nadia Mazziano. They'd had a lot of feedback that the devices were difficult for people who are blind and vision impaired because they have no fixed buttons. It's just a screen and there's no way of navigating it. There's no sort of tactile signals anywhere, and yet they proceeded with it and rolled it out and looked like losing a fairly significant discrimination case in court. So they settled out. So it's interesting to see, you know, that some of the banks are really trying to roll out equipment, systems, processes that are helpful, and others are kind of a bit resistant around that. And then I just wanted to talk about a couple of apps. I mean, there are thousands and thousands of things that now I think are really quite helpful. And I just wanted to pick out a couple. And some of you may have had experiences with them, and I'm delighted to, you know, to have a conversation about what people have found useful and, you know, what's worth sharing. But LookTel Money Reader is one that's been around for quite a while now, I think. And, you know, you point your camera at a note and it'll tell you the denomination of it. And it's quite useful in that it supports 21 currencies, but quite a lot. So it's Australian dollar, US dollars, but, you know, another 18, 19 currencies around the world. It also has instant recognition. So it doesn't require you to take a photo, then have the OCR kind of upload it and then tell you what the note is. It tells you straight away. And it's also positive in that it doesn't need an internet connection. So in those areas when you're out and about and you don't have an internet connection, it still works. The second one, which I think is quite a bit newer, excuse me. How's my audio going? Am I still okay?
Audio.
Yep, absolutely fantastic. Keep going, Glenn. It's great.
Thank you. So the other one that I've been fairly impressed with is a thing called Seeing AI. It has a whole range of functionality around recognizing people and recognizing scenes, recognizing currency. But one of the things for me, you know, Faye was talking about the fact that the taxi driver is able to add a tip. And the same in, you know, in restaurants, cafes, anywhere you like. You know, if you're going to buy a cup of coffee and it's $4, you just use the card, which is a tap and go, which kind of starts to overcome some of the problems of having to use PIN numbers and navigate terminals and all of that kind of things. It's certainly a whole lot easier to just tap the card. But without vision, it's impossible to know, you know, what's on the screen. What has this person actually put in there? Have they charged me $98, which still keeps it under the $100 limit for my $4 cup of coffee? Well, Seeing AI allows you to just point the phone, your smartphone, and it will tell you exactly what's on the screen. And again, it reads instantly. It'll read everything on the screen and a whole range of different media. So it doesn't need to be on paper. It can be the screen, and it'll give you guidance as to, you know, can't see what you're pointing at, you need to move left or right, and it's instantaneous as well. And this is one that's been developed by Microsoft. So I think it's one that they're going to continue to develop and to operate, but I'd love to hear other people's experiences around it. I just think it's been a really good one. And then the other thing that I thought was fairly useful was to just provide Apple Viz, which I'm sure a number of people have had a look at, but it's really about, you know, their statement is about empowering blind and low vision users of Apple products and related apps. But it's always a good source of reviews. It's a good source of new apps that are coming out and you know, people discussing them and kind of providing feedback around them as well, and then blogs and podcasts and a whole bunch of things. So I've just found it a fairly useful resource. And then I just wanted to finish up with a comment that says, you know, if you think about blind, vision impaired people as a group of customers for the banks, it's upwards of 350,000 people. So it's a pretty good market segment for them. And they really should be doing a fair bit around, you know, developing products that are going to make life easier and technology that's going to make things easier. So that's me. And I was just going to say that, you know, if at some point people wanted to speak to me, I've provided in this slideshow email address and contact details, but I'm glenc@lifeful.com.au. And when I circulate this, all of my contact details will be there, and Faye has them as well. So that's it.
Wow. Thank you, Glenn. That's been most informative. It's interesting because just listening to you, there are so many of the things I've been running around Ballarat with my seeing AI and saying, do you mind if I look at your machine just to confirm that we could actually do that, get that information on the FPOS machines? And it works brilliantly on all of them. It's fantastic. So they all think I'm mad, but, you know, that's not unusual. So we've got a number of people on now, and we've got a couple of people. Bill Jolly. Bill is quite a financial person. He's been on the finance committee for blind citizens, and I'm assuming you're still there, still on the committee, Bill. You might need to unmute your phone, Bill.
Yep. Yes, I'm here, but I was unmuting the phone.
Yeah. So, Bill has been involved in that financial world for some time. Is there anything that you'd like to add to what Glenn said, Bill?
Thanks, Faye. Thanks very much, Glenn, for your presentation. I think you covered a lot of really practical points. I guess from my own personal experience in recent years, I've found that some of the banking apps on the iPhone or using the iPhone are really good. For a long time, I found difficulty with banking apps, and I didn't use the Westpac one because you had a virtual screen where you had to put in sort of pick and poke to put in the user the password. So that was just too much for me. But now with my iPhone, I've got a Westpac app, and I've also got an ANZ one from a credit card, and I can easily follow the transactions that are of things going into and out of my accounts. And I find they seem to go out of the account very fast these days. but that's something that's really useful. And I encourage people, if you haven't had a go at the banking apps on your iPhone because you just haven't got around to it, to think about it and try it. You'll find that it's very good. I also use a program with Westpac to check a small share portfolio that I have, and I can buy and sell shares myself. I often get my wife, Carmel, who has low vision, to do it just because it is so much quicker, but I can do it myself. And I do appreciate that independence, although I've been sitting there very quietly in the last few weeks. I actually think of the share market as like having a collection of chooks down the back. We had chicks when we were kids. And you have much more flexibility if you invest in the share market compared to investing in property. And we were saving up for a trip to go away this year, which is unfortunately been cancelled. But when it came time to pay for some of the tours we were going to do, one in Turkey and one in Israel and one in Scotland. The analogy for me was to go down to the Chook Yard and find something nice and plump, and you know, like you do at Christmas or Easter. That has to go on the back burner there for a while. You've suggested we're very practical, Glenn, and I felt that it was very beneficial, and I would appreciate seeing the PowerPoint presentation or the accessible form of it, and particularly for some of the references that you might have in there. So thanks for your presentation.
That's a pleasure. Thanks, Bill. And you're right about that kind of flexibility between the stock market and the and property investments, for example. It's a bit hard to kind of go and take a door because you want to pay for, you know, a couple of bits and pieces. You're either in the property or you're out of the thing, whereas with the stock market, you can kind of sell down a little bit. But, interesting times at the – by the way, I love the analogy of the plump chooks. I've got a friend – I live in Dalesford, and one of my mates runs a business here, and he always talks in terms of hay bales. So, you know, when things are going well during the season, when everybody's cutting, you throw, you know, a bit in the shed and you've got some hay bales, and then you take them out for the rest of the year. And if at the end of the year you've got some hay bales left in there, then you've had a good year.
That's right. It's a bit like that.
Okay. So we'll just go around the group as we did yesterday, and people can ask questions. Just for those who are streaming this, Cole, are you happy to give out the number for that? You'll need to unmute your phone too.
Yes, Faye, I'm quite happy. As a matter of fact, my iPhone's tied up at the moment because Lainey Heath was unable to get onto the stream, so she's rung my iPhone, so she's listening to my speakerphone, so she's joined in that way. But by all means, people can send me emails.
Okay, and that's cwatson4@vtown.com.au, is that correct?
That's correct.
So cwatson4@vtown.com.au. Okay, also I'm happy for people to call in on my number, which is 0400 22 84 34, and anyone who has questions later or wants information about where to contact people, please use my number and give me a call. Okay, so we'll head around the circle. So we've got Crystal. Would you like to make a comment or ask a question?
Hi. I imagine I'm coming through.
Yes, you are.
Yep, awesome. it was a pretty good presentation. I enjoyed that. And I just wanted to comment, the Look Tell Money Reader, I believe that's obsolete now. I don't think it actually, I think it's been pulled.
Absolutely.
It has. But if you've still got it on your device, it'll still run.
Oh, okay.
Cash Reader by another company is the one that everyone's going for now.
Okay, cool. And I haven't tried seeing AI on, like, to look at an F-plus screen. I might try that. I guess I just thought it would hold up proceedings. If you've got a big line of people behind you, they might not necessarily appreciate that, but I'll have to give that a go. I haven't really had any problems with people sort of trying to rip me off or anything like that. And I always look at my banking transactions in my, because I use the Westpac app as well, and find it extremely useful. I just wish that Westpac would pull up their socks and get Apple Pay, because that would just be awesome. I like that presentation. So thanks.
Okay,
Thanks, Crystal. You said a pretty good presentation. That's high praise indeed. That'll do me.
Okay. And next on is Dean.
Yeah, it was a really, really great presentation. And also the advice was really good. It's more what I've got is more a couple of suggestions and sort of, you know, my experience relating to the banking side of things. Commonwealth Bank used to have audio enabled ATMs, but I was finding when I needed to get cash out, the ATMs were out of action more than they were working. So I used to just sort of go into the supermarket and just get money out, you know, with there. I found that was quite a safe option. Regarding the apps, of course, the Commonwealth Bank app is really accessible with using VoiceOver. And regarding the Money Reader app, the Looktel Money Reader, as Elise said, works on some devices. There's another device out which is a bit newer, and that's called Cash Reader, which is the similar sort of principle to Money Reader. But and it also works with a wider range of currencies too as well. So yeah, just thought I'd just throw some tips out there.
And was that one $140 Cash Reader? I think
it wouldn't be that much.
No, it's about 25 or 30, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, around then. Yeah. You can pay it off. You can get like there's a free trial and then you can get I can't remember now. I think it's 3 months or something, and then you can just pay the full amount, which is around about 27, I think. So quite expensive, obviously, for an app, but I've found it does the job, and it also what I was really impressed with it is it also works with currencies in places like Thailand and Bali where I've been before, but haven't been able to access the currency. So when I go back, I'm going to go back to Bali or something again, it'd be good to be able to access their currency independently.
You do have to load the currencies in manually as opposed to the old Looktel Money Reader NAMP Money Reader that just automatically picked it up.
Just a comment, anyone who's accessing disability-specific apps, if you have an NDIS plan, that can come out of your consumables. You know, mm-hmm. That's quite a legitimate. Anything which you need, which is specifically because of your disability, you will be able to request or access through consumables. So, yeah. Okay, we'll keep moving around. And Martin Stewart.
Hi, everyone. I want to emphasize receipt gathering. Now, there's the banking apps, but they're not immediately enabled to receive receipts. So you either need to ring your bank if you're unsure how to do it, or go inside your banking apps and make sure that notifications for receipts of different types are enabled. I had an incident where a support worker of mine was picking up a chemist item and the chemist had forgot to apply the government discount and it was $61 instead of what I knew it should be, and that's $6.40. And before she even though I wasn't there, before she left the chemist, I rang up and I said, "This is too expensive." And she said, "How did you know?" And I said, "Don't worry about how I know. I'll tell you when you get home." But the point is, can you talk to the chemist now and get a refund because they've made an error? And that was done on the site before she even left. And then she came home and she said, "Gee, how did you know?" And I then told the story about how I was receiving instant details on receipts. Apple Pay also does that. Of course, some banks, Westpac is the outlier there. They haven't enabled that yet. It also is very often now where you receive receipts and the premises are saying, well, these will fade. So even if you have them, they'll fade after some time. So it's a very good idea to get these receipts enabled on your apps or take a photograph of them and send them to mail and put them in a particular email box that you have reserved for that purpose.
Yeah, one of the other things that we use for receipts is a thing called HubDoc, which allows you to take a photo of the receipt, but it then captures all of the data that's in there, and it learns to recognise even logos as a particular organisation. It'll keep track of all of those. So it's got the OCR that's in there, and then it'll give you a screen to be able to change them. But it also maintains the photo of it. And for those people that may be a little anal retentive, you're also able to upload that data into a whole range of accounting systems like, you know, Xero and various others, and it keeps it for an ongoing period and fairly easily accessible to be able to get back to receipts as well.
If I could ask a question to you, Glenn, I'm thinking something that's possibly really stupid. So here we go. Trust me to come out with something that I haven't thought out properly. I'm thinking when the economy starts to improve from this current disaster in so many forms, would it be good to buy Qantas shares, thinking to myself that they'll go up by about 70% fairly quickly?
Look, I again, not financial advice in any way, shape or form, but I reckon buying Qantas shares now is a fantastic idea. Look, there's a big punt there. You know, under the Abbott government, they allowed Ford and Holden to effectively fail and leave the country, despite the fact that they were both, you know, cultural icons. And I didn't think that would happen. So, you know, there's a great assurance that says, look, it's a great Australian airline. It's part of our history. We need to have a national airline. Tourism is so important to us. The government won't allow it to fail. They'll continue to support it. Now, if that's the case, as you say, as soon as things bounce back, there's a fantastic, you know, it'll come back up to where it was, because it's no less an airline than it was previously. So I think with them where they are at the moment, they're a fantastic buying opportunity. The caveat being, there is a very small chance that the government could actually allow them to fail and not be there. That's your only possible downside risk, I think.
Good information for all of us. Stephen Jolly, any comments or questions that you would like to ask Stephen?
Yes, thank you, Faye. Congratulations, Martin, on that magnificent snap from the boundary line to sort the chemist arrangement out. thank you, Glenn, for your presentation this morning. Lots of good information there, and a lot to think about. And I was just saying to Vicky, my wife, who's sitting alongside me here, now joined the meeting, that HubDoc sounds a great idea to capture your receipts. So we'll investigate that. I just want to make a quick comment about seeing AI and recognising the money. I believe there is an area in seeing AI where it recognises different denominations, but it hasn't got the Australian currency sorted yet. We need to just verify that that's still the case, and if so, Microsoft should be lobbied about it. I know one or two people have made approaches, but maybe a body like this could achieve something there if we can get them to sort out having the Australian currency recognised by seeing AI. I know until at least very recently it hasn't been doing it. That's all. Thanks.
Okay. And Adam Morris. Hi, Adam. Any input you'd like to have, especially as an echo person?
Glenn, thanks very much for the great presentation. Don't really have any input to put in, except to let people know that if they're using Apple Pay, a lot of places will say, oh, no, we don't have Apple Pay if they've got the Alberts. I've found that if you just do Apple Pay, it actually works. Even though the establishment, you know, may not know that they've got it.
Mm. Interesting. Okay, thanks, Adam. Next, we've got Jamie Kelly. Oh, no, we haven't got Jamie Kelly. We've lost him. Yeah, we've lost him. Okay, Marie.
Yes, good morning, everybody. Sorry I was a few minutes late getting in. I can't quite manage this Zoom some days. Thank you very much, Glenn, for the presentation. I'm too old for the NDIS, so I won't make any comment on any of that part of it. I'm not even into telephone or internet banking because I leave that to my sighted husband to do, so I'm going to have a lot to catch up on possibly in the future. So all of this information is all hopefully to be stored away. So thanks very much.
That's a pleasure. And it was a really, really poor, I think, arbitrary decision that was made by government around, you know, just cutting off the NDIS at 65. It just seems absolutely, I don't know, I just understand how that decision was ever made. I think there was an assumption that the aged care system would always be catering for people, but the person centricity and the ability to get access to a whole bunch of other things through the NDIS just doesn't make itself available in that age. Mm.
Okay, and next we've got Carmel's iPhone. So who is Carmel's iPhone? Double tap to unmute. No?
Yeah, Carmel's iPhone called us on her own.
Okay. So
Carmel's iPhone is Carmel Jolly.
Okay.
Now, hang on, Carmel. You have to unmute your phone.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, Carmel.
We're at for a walk for the time and technology while we walk.
You might need to pop your phone a bit closer, Carmel.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like you've got your finger over the mic on the bottom.
Take your earphone out.
Hello, everyone. Sorry.
See if that's better. Okay.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah, so we're out for a walk trying to manage the technology. And I know I'm a woman and I should be able to do two things at once, but I'm can't at the moment.
No, I don't think they're hearing you.
What?
Are you hearing Carmel?
Right off mic. Sorry, Carmel, we can't copy you.
Okay. It doesn't matter. You just
hang on. Hang on.
Well, we just
issues at once.
Sorry, everyone. Can you hear me now?
Much
better.
Yes. I'm on Bill's phone, so I don't know why mine's not working. But I apologise for the inconvenience to everyone. We're out for a walk at the moment, and managing the technology at the same time. So, and thanks, Glenn, for your presentation. It was very useful. So that's all I've got to say.
Thanks, Carmel.
Thank you.
You've got to be a bit careful out there. It looks pretty cloudy where you are. It might be
Yes, yes, but we've got to get some walking in while we're housebound.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Bye.
Okay, thanks, Carmel. And Cole?
Yes, great presentation. Wonderful. The only contribution I would make in recent times, I've gone to the post office and obtained myself a debit card from there. So when I'm shopping on the computer, rather than expose my millions of dollars to the rest of the internet, I just keep a couple of $100 in a debit card that I can use online so that if someone does do the dirty on me, they're not wipe me out. And I think that's a pretty good piece of advice to everyone that I received.
Absolutely.
Good idea.
Yeah. Okay, and we've got phone with ending in 578. If you could unmute
Brian.
Brian, is it? Whose phone ends in 578? You need to unmute your phone.
Can you hear me?
That's better.
Yeah, I'd like to thank for the presentation. It was really good. I don't think about the only thing I've ever had trouble with was getting my credit card information from Westpac, and they used to abbreviate a lot of the places where you spent your money. and that was very confusing. And I'm not one that keeps my receipts like I should. And I had to ring up a couple of times and try to work out where these places were. And one was a vet, but it had something like BALV. And it was about $170. I was very panicky over that. And now they've changed. They actually put the whole business name on the information, so it's a lot easier now. But it used to be very scary sometimes, wondering where I've spent my money. But thanks for the presentation. That was good.
Thank you.
Okay. And next we have a mobile phone ending in 895. If you could unmute your phone. So 895, if your phone number ends in that, if you could unmute, that would be great. No luck. Here we go. No, we're still unmuted. Okay, and we also have one more mobile phone. So if you haven't yet had a chance to have some input and you'd like to, can you unmute your phone? It just says call in user 2. No, we have no one coming in. Okay. Yes.
Hello.
Yes, that's Roz, is it?
It's Roz, yeah.
Okay. Yes.
I'd just like to, that was a really good presentation, Glenn. And, but you didn't sing us a song.
What would you like to hear?
Oh, you're going to have linemen for the county or something like that, of course.
I was a lineman for the county.
There we go. You can sing. I'd just like to comment that you were talking about all the different business opportunities for people now online and working from home, which a lot of people are taking up, and I just really encourage people to do that if you can. Really, you need a little bit of capital, depending on what you've what kind of business you want to be in. But I think it's just very rewarding. I've had my little business for about 5 years now, and you know, it's in this type of climate that we're in now, I just find it really good because I can just keep working and from home, and it's I'm finding it very rewarding.
Fantastic.
We're not a millionaire, but still, you know, it's very good. I'm not a huge receipt saver, I'm afraid, either. But I'll try. I use the Commonwealth app, which I find really good on the iPhone, and I can keep track of things, which is really good. Yeah. So, so thanks very much.
Thanks, Roz. And there are, just for other people's information, the little bit of capital, there are quite a number of groups, government, various others that have some funds available if people are keen to kick off a business. So they will put some of that seed funding in, a bit of capital in for you to be able to. I think there is a growing recognition that workplaces will probably always be difficult. And, you know, we're not making as much progress as we can, but there are opportunities for people to start their own business, which is fantastic. Avoids the whole issue of trying to redesign workplaces that are somewhat resistant. So even that little bit of the fund to be able to get some capital in place is available.
I'm just a micro business, but I find that forms for grants and things is very, very difficult because they're far too complicated. There's me and some volunteers, so I don't have the time to go through them, and they're really made for larger businesses. But so I've had to go through other ways to fund myself.
Mm.
What's your business? Do you want to do a quick ad for yourself? Or?
Oh, why not? I do brow and audio production. We're only very small scale, but we do little quirky things. So I've got some very unusual projects on the way. But we're Access Able Braille Enterprises, and we're on the Central Coast of New South Wales. And I can walk by the seaside any time to get rid of any viruses.
Well done.
Yeah.
Okay. That's all fabulous. Just a comment that I would like to make is change your passwords. You know, don't sit on the same password. Have, if possible, have different passwords for different accounts. You know, people often have more than one card. And to have the same password for every card means that if they get your wallet, they've got the lot. So I have different passwords. Sometimes that's a bit of a challenge, but I try and link it to something that relates to it so that I don't forget what it is. But, yeah, change passwords. All the banks will tell you that as well. So, brilliant.
Very wise.
Yeah. One of the things that we're all aware of and Glenn has touched on is the high rate of unemployment in people who are blind or vision impaired. And it's, I think a lot of it is because organisations are very fearful of how do I cater for this person? You know, how do I include them in my workplace in a way that's, you know, going to make money for me, because that's why people employ staff. They don't do it as a charity. They do it because they want to make money. But they also, you know, will want to be inclusive wherever possible. Well, hopefully. So one of the things that I'm wondering is, and I would love people to email me any thoughts on it, is how can Blind Alliance as an organisation have an impact on the employers? How can we let those people know how capable we are as a group? Because we've got Adam, we've got Elise, we've got Roz, and I'm sure there are many other people here who have got their own small business and do it very successfully. So any thoughts on how we can share that information would be fantastic, because, you know, I've been an employment consultant. I understand the challenges in getting people into roles, and I would love to see a much higher rate of employment within our sector. So...
Many years ago, BCA used to have a employment register, which was, I think, more of a mentoring type of device. And that was really, really handy. Some people rang me up for advice and stuff like that. But, of course, that's gone into a deep... now, but that was a really good idea to have that employment and mentoring register. But to turn it around for employers, this is what you're talking about, aren't you?
Yeah. But that's still
To get skills, people and their skills, and for those types of things.
Mm. I'm not. Some of you will know that many years ago now, I worked at Vision Australia as an employment consultant, and I was very successful at it. And the reason I felt I was successful at it was because I had been on the other side of the desk. I had been an employer, and therefore, what I realised was I could not see the point in ringing up an employer and saying, "Would you consider employing a blind person?" And the reason I say that is because, once again, employers, they're there to make money. You know, you wouldn't bother running your own business if you weren't going to make money. It's hard work. And so what I would look for was a natural fit for the person, because what you want is a job that you can go into and hit the ground running and be good at it. And, you know, we have such incredible talent amongst, you know, our member groups, And, you know, I just think so much of it is wasted. My own personal experience, I worked for the NDIA for 10 months. After 10 months of still battling with accessibility issues, because the programs don't work well with Zoom text, I finally thought, I can't do this anymore. It's just too hard. And to me, that's a very sad statement about our disability agency. And the people I worked with, they absolutely understood and were as frustrated as I was. But, you know, this shouldn't be happening. Yes, Dean. Sorry.
Dean, go ahead.
What I found, as I mentioned yesterday, that I was out of work for nearly 6 years. And I think what was the real contributor to me being in the job, you know, getting a job and seeking employment, was I was very persistent and insistent and made sure the employment agencies actually did what they were meant to do. And I also did in the case of the interview, I took my laptop in running JAWS. So while I couldn't perform the actual job that, you know, obviously through the laptop, I couldn't, you know, demonstrate in a job situation, but I also could demonstrate how JAWS works and how I would function. And I also think what it is as well is, I mean, I was lucky that, you know, Southeast Water, that my workplace were open to, you know, they thought, look, we'll give it a try and sort of see how. I think that's what it sort of is down to companies that are prepared to investigate and to see what is possible, see how it can also do. And I also think how Blind Alliance can is to really push the job access and how they can assist, because a lot of companies would probably think, and rightly so, I've got to spend this money on this person.
Yes.
I've got to spend all this money when, you know, they're probably not aware that job access is available to them.
Yes. That should be coming from the DES. You know, if you're working through a DES, that should be coming through them. But
yeah, that's right.
Not all fantastic.
And I would also say us as, you know, vision impaired people should be able to, where possible, and it's not possible for everyone, I do understand that, who, you know, to be able to explain how their technology works in a way that these people would understand. And also to the employment agencies to explain, you know, because there's often, in an employment agency, there's often a high turnover of consultant, high turnover of staff, and you often having to explain your situation to consultants time and time again. And often they don't know what's around or what's available from in the vision impaired space.
Yes, yes.
Faye, if I may, it's Martin.
Yes, Martin.
Yes. Blind Citizens Australia will be moving forward with a mentoring and positive influence project on this very subject of employment.
Yes.
And that was due to begin very shortly through Naomi Barber. The problem is, of course, now that this COVID-19 has broken loose, we're thinking no one's going to do anyone. So there's going to be a delay in launching it. It's going to be called Eyes to the Future, and there's a lot going into that. Keep yourselves out for that.
Okay, Martin, you're echoing and we're losing you.
Strange.
Developments. And announcements, but the person to contact one. Am I through a Jay?
No, you're not.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay, I'll wait until it improves.
Okay, so is it Naomi Barber that people contact once BCA is back up and running with a workforce in the office?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Because certainly I think Blind Alliance should be supporting that in any way that we can.
Faye.
Yes.
I just wanted to point out there's a few other hands up as well. I was reading it with Jaws. Stephen Jolly's one of them.
Yes.
And myself and might be a couple of others, but it's lost focus again. Just thought I'd let you know there's a few more there.
Thank you. So, well, we'll go to Stephen first.
I actually had my comment earlier and I forgot to take my hand down. I didn't realise why my arm was getting so tired.
Yep, it's must be a very sore arm.
Okay, Elise.
I've got a number of things, and I'm glad that Glenn's been able to come back on. He dropped off there.
Yes.
One of them's harking back to the Westpac situation. It is the last of the major four banks in Australia to embrace Apple Pay. It's been almost a year since the last bank came on board, which was when Martin did some wonderful work with the NAB. And I remember being in a conversation with Martin at the time, and he raised a very good thought about it all, is that it is an issue now of accessibility, because you pull out cards, and especially with these new pension cards that are slippery and thin and stick to other cards, thank you, Centrelink, thank you not, it's very easy to pull out cards from your purse or your wallet and not know that you've maybe pulled another card out with it and dropped it. So the convenience of just holding a device up to an FPOS terminal, be it your phone or even the Apple Watch, is just so fantastic. The only way I can get around it, because I'm with Westpac as well, and I don't particularly want to change just for Apple Pay, but I've used my Gem Visa, which means I've then got to go on the net when I get home and pay the Gem Visa back what I've spent, just because I bought some incidental things down at the supermarket, which is not really what the Gem Visa is for. It's for more major purchases with, you know, interest-free periods, etc. And I'm just wondering, you know, if has anyone actually thought about the accessibility issue of, and the safety issue of not having to pull out a card. For those of us who have got the devices, I realise everybody hasn't got Apple Pay and everybody hasn't got a suitable device that will do it. But for those of us who have, I think it's actually an indictment on Westpac that they have not embraced that technology.
Mm.
Yeah, and I was wondering, yes, Martin, how are you doing on that?
Yeah, I have been speaking to them and making those very points that you are. And the interesting thing is that Westpac in New Zealand are supporting Apple Pay. That's extraordinary. So it's getting closer.
Yeah, but yeah, across the ditch.
We're not there yet, but I'm in there and in, you know, being very persistent, consistent, and all the other ints, I'm trying my best, and they're just seemingly resistant. And at the moment, with all other hands on deck with regarding COVID-19, I think they're going to use that as another reason not to do it.
Oh, if you want to get out of doing anything in this world, just say those magic two words, COVID-19.
That's right.
Coronavirus.
Just say 19.
Say 19.
Cut it short, just say 19, yeah.
thank you. The other thing I wanted to talk about was the fact that we do have a high rate of unemployment in the blindness sector. And, you know, I started a group called Blindness and Beyond, on myself and a few others. And I think if we can, one of the good things about the NDIS is that it shouldn't necessarily be fully sighted people always offering assistance to blind people or people with low vision. It's opened up a wonderful marketplace for anybody with an ABN or a company number, etc., that has the skills that are provided, whether you're operating as a support person or doing the more specialised, under the specialised code that I work under. And I think, you know, we've got a lady up there on the Central Coast who's doing transcription. We've got Adam, we've got myself. Mm. There's a number of, and give some thought to what you can give back to the community If you've got a skill, a transcription skill, there's some really neat blindies, braillies out there rather, who can transcribe. It need not always be the realm of the big boys, the, you know, the access technology realm of providing service. It's been traditional that it's been in the, you know, the realm or the space of the big boys, but it doesn't have to stay that way. Never. Not now. Which would increase your prospects for employment should you decide to move on to another organisation, or it obviously puts money in the bank and it's a wonderful thing to put on your own resume that you've run your own business.
Well done, Elise. In fact, sorry, Elise, I've had some very good referrals from people who are not satisfied with rate of bureaucracy, etc.
Yep. Well,
dare I say more?
Well, you can, because it slows up the process. And I said to my manager when I worked for one of these larger organisations, I've never once met a client who gives two hoots about the amount of bureaucracy, check boxes, filling in forms, and us stressing about the lack of admins we support we get here. They don't care. They just want the service. They want their equipment, yeah, and they want the advice, and they want us in front of them, not sitting in the office checking boxes.
Yeah,
absolutely. So I agree with that wholeheartedly. I think, you know, there's a huge opportunity for the blindness community as a whole to, you know,
pull together.
Promote their services, support each other, and it may be something that we could put on our newsletter.
Yep.
Maybe we could run some very cheap advertising, and that would be a source of funding to pay for things like insurance for Blind Alliance, and, you know, maybe $10 a newsletter or something if you want to promote your business.
Yeah.
We'd obviously be interested in hearing from anyone. We'd be happy to do that, Cole. And Lainey, if she's listening, are you there, Cole?
Just while we're waiting for Cole to come up, my friend Kelly, as you know, had some wonderful ideas.
Yes.
You know, even businesses in our realm being able to donate a small percentage of our income to, you know, something like Blind Alliance.
Yeah.
To give it a kick along, which in turn will give us a kick along, because help you guys, if we help Blind Alliance, Blind Alliance will find a way of helping us. Yes. And it can be in the way of a referral, you know. That's what Blindness and Beyond, our little project, was about.
Yes.
Making referrals to one another.
So is it still going, Elise?
Blindness and Beyond? Yes, it is. Yep,
yeah.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, it is. The social media page is there, and the WhatsApp group is still there. We are building a website, but we've had a bit of a hold up on that. So as I said at the beginning of the year to some of the other people, we are sadly not platform agnostic. We are still trapped in just social media. So I'm using social media as much as I can until we get the website ready.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think we're just about to an end, unless we've got any questions through streaming, but nothing has come through to me. If anyone has questions later, I'm in touch with Glenn regularly. If your question is directed to Glenn, or if it's a Blind Alliance question, please send it through to either Colin and myself. My email address is faye.baxter, the letters M for Mary, I for Indigo, @gmail.com, and Collins is cwatson4@vtown.com.au. Our phone numbers are also up on the website. Mine's 0400 22 84 34, and Colin, I'm not sure what yours is off the top of my head, but it is on the website. And please don't hesitate to contact us with suggestions or requests.
Faye, it's Jamie Kelly speaking.
Yes, Jamie.
Can I apologise? You called my name before and my phone dropped out, so I wasn't being rude.
That's okay.
I took me a little while to come back. But I just want to make a comment, if you don't mind, before you finish.
No, that would be firstly, great.
Firstly, thanking Glenn for his presentation.
Definitely.
I didn't come in at the start, but I did really enjoy it. I didn't have any comments about that so much, but I had a general question about the membership of Blind Alliance. Yes. You were saying yesterday that it's $10
per year
or $25
for three years.
I'm just sort of wondering, I mean, I'd be happy to be a member, but the problem I have is having to sort of remember to pay that money all the time. Is there any way there could be maybe a higher one-off joining fee or something or whatever? I just find having to pay money every year to be a member of something a little bit sort of...
Yeah, we'd have to have a discussion about that as a board.
It's just a general comment that I wanted to make because I would be happy to join.
Yeah, good thought.
But I sort of feel like if I join, I don't want to have to keep having to pay membership to be a member. That was all really.
Yeah, okay.
That's why we're encouraging people to take out the 3-year membership just to make it easier on you.
Yeah.
Can I make a comment at this point? It's Martin.
Yes.
That's a good segue into what I think we all should keep in our minds today, and that is this conversation wouldn't be happening if it wasn't for the formation and actuality of Blind Alliance being here. It's really important to support our smaller advocacy organisations such as this, because the more voices, the more opportunities we have to inform each other and to advocate for change. And I want to congratulate Blind Alliance for sticking with it as you have, despite a lot of stormy waters that I know have existed for you, and thanking you very much for the opportunity this weekend for us to get together. You've made an opportunity out of adversity, talking about resilience, and the opportunity that you've created here is, I hope, a higher profile. But that can only actually occur if we put our words into action, our supportive words, Jamie just said, and that is, I'd like to join. I'd like to join has got to end up being, I have joined. So congratulations to you. It's really important, as I said, that smaller groups like this become larger, because that means they'll be more influential on our behalf.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you. Well, just before we close, I would like to make my thanks to Glenn for a wonderful presentation and for giving up his time on a Sunday, his children time. And also to thank Elise Lonsdale and Michael Kelly. Michael has been looking after our streaming and we're most grateful for that. And Elise has just been amazing. She has set up this Zoom conferencing facility for us, and it would not have happened without her. So our eternal thanks. Look, Elise, you've done an amazing job.
It's been a privilege to pitch in.
Just before we do close, Amy Heath is on the line from Brisbane. She'd like to say something about the work that Faye has done to get this underway too.
Faye, I'm not sure if this is coming through, is it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Faye, I just wanted to say thank you very much on behalf of the board and our membership and all those that have been present. You've done an absolutely fantastic job and it's been a real pleasure to be a part of it. Certainly learnt so much over the last couple of days and that's been very exciting. I just want to thank you for the incredible way that you just turned this around at the last moment from a physical conference to a teleconference, and I've really enjoyed the whole process of it, actually. I think it's been really exciting and just wonderful having people dropping in and dropping out as we have and putting their comments through. So really warm thanks from all of us.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you to everyone who's participated, because it's been great getting all of that, that incredible input from everyone and suggestions and comments. It's been amazing. So thank you. Okay, well, I think if there are no further comments, we might close the session and everybody can get back to doing their Sunday stuff.
Mill.
Congratulations, Blind Alliance.
Congratulations, everybody.
Yeah, thank you. Wonderful job. Thanks very much.
Well done. Thank you.
Well done, everyone.
45 people attending today.
Really enjoyed it.
Yep.
On the streaming?
I think there were, hang on, I'll just check the figures again. I thought I added up to 45. Some on the stream and about 15 here.
I think there were 17 here a minute ago when I looked.
Yeah, let me just check the stream stats. No, there were 40 on the stream at one point.
Yeah.
40 online, this is at one point. And there's always been an average of about 14 or so here on Zoom. At the moment, I think we're up to 14, but I think we did get up to 17. So
you're
once again, 67 odd people. We've reached out to 2 days in a row, over twice the number of people that have been at the physical venue. And I think that is something that we can all, as members of Blind Alliances, or people who are wishing to join, and the board of and the workers of Blind Alliance can stand proud of.
Well, thanks to you.
It shows what the theme of resilience is about in adversity too, doesn't it? Like the adversity was we couldn't go ahead with our physical conference, but switching to an online conference, we've actually probably touched more people.
I think it's brilliant. Yeah.
Yep. Sorry, I think Martin was trying to say something, but thank you, Carl.
Yeah, sorry.
Thanks to you, Elise, and thanks to you.
He sounds like a master.
Making this part of it possible.
You're welcome.
And was it Michael who...
Michael Kelly's doing the streaming, yeah.
Yes.
So we've put the link around the place.
Is it not coming through again?
You should have taken the invitation to come over to my place.
My voice is not really like this.
Poor Martin.
Yes. Okay, well.
Thank you all very much.
Thanks, everybody.
Congratulations. Thanks again, Martin, and thank you, Faye.
Yeah, that's great.
Bye-bye from Bill Jolly.
Thanks. Bye-bye, Bill.
That was great catching
up
a number of people.
Well done, everyone. Stephen Jolly signing in.
Bye, all.
Bye, all.
Bye, all. Thanks, Faye. Thanks, Elise.
Bye-bye, everyone.
You're welcome. Thank you, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well done, Elise. Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Thank you. Okay.